From Luminary Media, you've crossed over to Spooked. Yes, Spooksters. This is just one of the episodes from our new season of Spooked, available on Luminary Premium. Our partnership with Luminary allows us to produce 26 all-new episodes of Spooked, more than we ever have before, and all of it ad-free on the Luminary app. Sign up for Luminary Premium and access your first month of all premium shows, including the newest Spooked episode, for free. After that, the service is just $7.99 per month, and you can cancel anytime. Terms apply. Just go to luminarypodcast.com. There are people for whom stuff just happens. They are there when the house bursts into flame. They witness the robbery. Lightning strikes their tractor the very moment they step away. It's like the unfolding stories know that they need a witness, and they wait for certain people before they even begin to occur. For WNYC Studios and Snap Judgment's Underground Lair, my name is Glenn Washington. If the story's gonna happen, remember the details. Spook starts now. Out in the woods at night, sitting around a campfire, poking at the coals. Folks get to telling scary stories, right? Well, you know the one person in your group that just has a knack for telling the best stories? The kind of storyteller that can make you scream, jump out your seat, make the hair on the back of your neck stand up? Wow. Spooksters, be afraid. We found a master storyteller. His name is Todd Naron. And if you're not already around a campfire, may I suggest that you dim the lights and get real cozy. Spooked.
My name's Todd Naron, Todd Curtis Naron. I'm from North Carolina, and I sure would enjoy telling you a couple of these stories today.
Little Barbara Nichols was a little girl I knew when I went to grade school in Corinth Holders. We were both in the first grade together. And she was beautiful. And, well, all the boys thought she was beautiful, but I knew I did, but I didn't ever tell nobody. But, every day I tried to get a little closer to her. She really didn't show me a lot of attention. I guess you'd say she was my first love. She was just beautiful. Well, like I said, me and Barbara, she came to my little grade school in Corinth Holders, and we were in the first grade together. And I also rode the same bus to and from school. Her mom and daddy didn't have much money. She lived down an old path it was actually a little shack way back then that nobody had lived in, but some old farmer had rented it to them, and they made a pretty good place out of it. One day, when she got off the bus, see, I didn't think she thought nothing of me, but when she got off the bus and started walking down the path, there was a great big mud hole, and she walked around it. She turned around right when she got out and over the mud hole, and she turned around and she waved right directly at me. That's when I decided I was going to love little Barbara and let the whole world know it. At least that's what I hoped for, but it wasn't meant to be. Because on her walk home down that long mile path, she had to pass a little pond about an acre and a half big. And this is where the sadness in the horror begins. You see, Barbara didn't make it home that day, and her parents went looking for her and couldn't find her. So they went down to the road and stopped people that were riding and asked them for their help. It was just amazing how many people just jumped into it and tried to find that little girl. They screamed, they walked every inch, every mile around that house. About 9 o'clock the next morning, she was found by the banks of the little pond, now called Barbara Nichols Pond, and is still there to this day. Back where Barbara lived, about a mile off the road, there was a bunch of wild dogs back there that people had just let go and abandoned. Enough people did this that the dogs kind of banded together. And to survive, they kind of had to be like a pack. And they would mostly kill just chickens and little goats and stuff like that. If you went by them on a motorcycle or something like that, they'd chase you. But I reckon if they ever got you, they got you. It seemed that those wild dogs were seen that day lying around that pond, and from Barbara's tracks and them dogs' tracks, it seems she must have been run into the water by them killer dogs to escape them from biting on her, and instead, my little Barbara drowned. I never did like them dogs, but I especially hated them after that. Well, everybody was really shocked. We just couldn't believe what was going on. I mean, this was really our first introduction to death. It scared us. We're all scared. We all were hurt. And we started seeing strange things happen around that pond. We began finding dead dogs floating on it or lying on the banks of it. They'd be swollen or rotting with bite marks where the turtles and catfish, buzzards, and were tearing into them. People would take the dogs hunting around that pond. When you called the dogs back in, at least one dog was missing. And you would like go around and try to holler for the dog for the next couple of days. And if nothing else left, you'd go to Barbara Nichols Pond and that dog would be there. Dead. And people just wouldn't hunt around there anymore. They just left it alone. Everybody told their little boys and girls not to ever go around that pond. We all thought, you know, that Barbara Nichols had something to do with them dead dogs, but I mean, we never saw anything happen. We just found dead dogs dead in there. I mean, we all kind of knew, being country folks, that I guess since Barbara Nichols had to die in there, they did too. It had to be a good 12 years. I had graduated from high school and was still working on the farm. Well, I had Uncle Hugh, and he stayed in Wake County. And he wanted to go frog gigging. That's where you catch the frogs and gig the frogs and skin them and eat the meat off the legs. Well, he wanted to come to Johnston County. He wanted me to show him the ponds around Johnston County and go frog gigging. So I said, yeah, and he promised a good time, which by this time I was a teenager, and that meant, you know, having some beer and stuff. Oh, frog gigging, that's one of the funniest things you could ever do. You take a little John boat, which is a little lightweight boat, and you have a frog gig. Some people use a 22 gun, but he had a frog gig. Slowly go around the pond edge with a spotlight, I mean a real strong spotlight, and you put it in the frog's eyes, and he'll stand just as still as he can be. And what you do is you got a gig, which is like a tiny little tripod for Neptune or something like that would use. And what you would do is you stick the frog, bring him in the boat, and you would kill the frog right off the bat so he wouldn't suffer. Then you would cut his legs off and put him back into the water, kind of like the circle of life kind of thing. So we go to all the ponds and everything, and nothing was happening. Nothing was happening. Probably 7 or 8 ponds. I mean, it was getting real embarrassing because we weren't getting nothing. And I told him that we would be getting something. So we didn't even have enough frogs for one person to have a meal out of. I said, I got one more pond we can go to. And I really didn't want to go to that pond. I didn't feel good about it. And I didn't even feel like I'd want to be a part of it. But I was kind of embarrassed that we didn't have nothing. I don't think I would have done it by myself. Well, I know I would have never done it by myself. But just having another person there gives you some kind of courage. It was real hard to get to, real marshy, and carrying a 300-pound boat, just the two of us, it was real heavy. We were doing all you could do just to get into the pond. And when you got into the pond, I had a lot of feelings of Barbara.
I just thought it's not the place to be.
And we started going around the pond edge real, real easy. And we were catching frogs. And we got to the back side of the pond, and we heard a dog yapping. This wasn't barking. This was like yapping in distress, like he was getting beat. We took a spotlight and we shined it up there into the sides of the bank, and we saw a dog coming yapping. He wasn't looking at us. He was looking at something behind him. Like he was just getting beat from behind and running through the water. But as fast as he was going, he hit that water out wide open. And he started swimming for the boat for all he was worth. We picked up the frog gig and the oar, and we thought, well, we don't know if he's got rabies or what he's got, but you know, we can't let him in this boat with us. But that dog kept going faster and faster and coming nearer and nearer to us. But he was still looking behind him. And right when he got to our boat, something sucked that dog in the water. I mean, a dog just don't drown like that. Uncle Hugh looked at me like he had never seen nothing like that in his life. And I know I had never seen anything like that in my life. That wasn't no ordinary thing. I knew something was up right then. So we were scared to death. I figured it must be little Barbara Nichols that got that dog. And she was running and she was getting revenge on them dogs, and she got a lot of revenge. I think Barbara Nichols was chasing that dog. I think she chased all them dogs. I wish that little Barbara would have went on to heaven or passed on somewhere. And I hate that she was down there running after dogs, but as fast as we could, we put that boat back on the truck and got out of there, and I ain't been back since. It's been called Little Barbara's Nickel Pond, and she can have it, I reckon.
I want to thank Todd Nairn for sharing his stories with us. Thank you for giving us all them feelings, Todd. Now, Todd, he asked us to give a shout out to the good Lord Jesus Christ, to his family, and to Anna Sussman for taking a chance on him. And if you want more stories about Todd Nairn from Todd Nairn, not to worry. Todd's got a book, Country Stories of Ghosts and Bad Men. Find out more on our website, snapjudgment.org. The original score was by Renzo Gorio, and that story was produced by Anna Sussman. Now, after this short break, we take you to one of the most iconic haunted places in all the world, the Stanley Hotel. Stay tuned. Spooksters, thanks for listening to this episode of our new season of Spook. We're very proud, because we're making this in partnership with WNYC Studios and the new Luminary Podcast Network, Be Afraid. 26 new episodes of Spook drop this season each week through Halloween and into a spooky November. Listen to them all by downloading the Luminary mobile app or go to luminarypodcast.com. Daniel Noah and his good friend Elijah Wood. Yes, that Elijah Wood. They started a podcast together called Visitations. From campfire tales to creature features, they cover it all, spooksters. And Daniel's story, it starts out in one of the most iconically scary places of all, Spook.
My name is Daniel Noah. I'm a filmmaker. I've always had an incredible fascination with tales of the supernatural since I was a little boy, but I was a real non-believer. I was a what you call a hardcore skeptic. I didn't think any of it was real. I'm part of a company that makes horror movies, and as such, we're frequently invited to events that are deliberately staged at places that are alleged to be haunted. In 2000, maybe 2014, we were at the Stanley Hotel for a film festival called the Stanley Film Festival. The Stanley Hotel is in Estes, Colorado. It is purported to be the most haunted structure in the world or something like that. The Stanley Hotel is very old. It's very beautiful. It's where Stephen King apparently had some sort of an experience that led him to write The Shining. So we were all there for this festival, and we were staying up late, just talking and hanging out, and got a call from another friend that we were doing a Ouija board up in one of the rooms. And my friends, who love this kind of stuff, wanted to go up and do it. And I thought it was ridiculous. I didn't believe in Ouija boards. I thought they were silly, and I didn't really want to do it, but I went along for the ride. So we went up to the room. There were maybe 15 people in this fairly large room, hanging out, drinking, listening to music. And then the Ouija board came out. It wasn't the Hasbro Ouija board. It was a Ouija board that had been made by a local artist. The planchette wasn't plastic. It was it was a wood material, and you know, everything was handmade. It wasn't manufactured in any way. The directions were written in cursive, on a piece of paper. So a group of four people got on it and started saying, "If there is a spirit here, please make yourself known." And I'm sitting in the corner rolling my eyes, and nothing happens. And thinking it's goofy and wishing that we would stop so that we could just get back to hanging out and catching up and not wasting time on this silly toy. Then someone said, "Let's try a different four people." So a different four people went on. And again, nothing happened. And they said, "Well, let's try a different four." So I came up. It was myself and three other people whom I know very, very well. Almost immediately, the planchette started moving. And this is one of these things that is very difficult to explain to someone who wasn't there. I understand how Ouija boards are purported to work, that you're all moving them unconsciously and, or someone's doing it deliberately to have fun with everyone, or you're all doing it without realizing it. This was different. Our fingers were on the planchette, but it was moving with such force and precision that I immediately could not understand what was happening. And I was looking at these three other people going, "Is one of my close friends trying to trick everyone? And how? How are they doing this? Because I'm looking and everyone's fingers are just sort of lightly hovering. No one's got a grip on the thing, but this thing is, it's moving with incredible force and precision. It felt like being pulled. There's not a doubt in my mind that I was not pushing this thing. I wasn't saying anything because I was uncomfortable. There was someone else who was doing the talking. And I have a photo that, so one of the people in the room wrote, transcribed everything that was communicated on the board. And I have a photo of the stationery from the hotel with all of these notes written on them. So it's an exact record of everything. The first word that came through on the board was "dad." The second word was "mom." The third word was "sorry." And then it started to fall into these repeating patterns. "Go, mom, mom, no, swim, mom, mom, swim, swim, swim." And then someone asked her name, and she responded, "Ave." At no point did she ever say, "I'm a girl." We all just knew. And then it became gibberish again, and eventually came back to the word "lake." Lake, 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 swim, swim, lake, lake. Someone asked her, "Did you drown in a lake?" And her answer was yes. And someone said, "Were you drowned in a lake?" And the answer was, "Mom." People in the room are becoming alarmed. The other thing that's happening is that as she's devolving into this repetition of the word swim, 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 the planchette... I know how crazy this sounds. The planchette started to spin. It felt like chaos. It felt like this girl was drowning in real time. So someone said, is there anything that you want to tell us? And the answer was, hide. And the person asked, hide from what? And the answer was, him. At that point, about half the people in the room left. Some of them were furious because they thought that we were playing a prank and they didn't appreciate it. What everyone in that room felt that night, even the people that were angry and leaving, was happening on a cellular level. And, you know, you hear people say, I felt the hair on the back of my neck stand up. It was that kind of a feeling. Something was happening that was absolutely undeniable. Someone said, is there anything that you would like us to do? And her answer was, follow. Follow where? And the answer was 3, 2, 4. And that was it. She was gone. The planchette stopped moving. It's like someone turned off some sort of static electricity machine or something. You just, your whole body just relaxes. Okay, it's over. And we suddenly realized, oh, she wants us to go up to room 3, 2, 4. So by now, I would say it's maybe 3 a.m. and a very, very small, intrepid group of us decided to go to room 3, 2, 4. So we circle up the stairs. And as we're ascending to the third floor, there's a couple standing on the landing who are in hysterics. We've never seen them before. They're just guests at the hotel. The woman is sobbing hysterically, and the man turns to us as we're coming up the stairs behind them, and he says, don't come up here! So, of course, we immediately went up there, and the woman is, like, crying, and the guy is, you know, he's red-faced and wide-eyed and pale, and we say, what happened? And they say, we saw something in the hallway. We said, well, what did you see? And the woman was incoherent. The man said, it was a tiny figure. And we said, well, what did it look like? And he said, well, I didn't see it with my eyes. I saw it with my mind. But I think it was a little girl. And we said, well, where was it? And he said, I'm not going down that hallway to show you. At this point, it was just myself and one other friend. We said, we're going to walk and you tell us when to stop. So we walked and walked and walked, and he said, right there. And sure enough, it was in front of room 324. What will haunt me forever is what would have happened if they hadn't been there, because she was waiting for us. And would we have seen that little figure? The next day was our last day before we were leaving. I went down to the basement of the hotel to the archive, because when you check in, they very excitedly say the hotel is very haunted, and if you should happen to experience anything, go down and report it to the archive, which I thought was silly when I checked in. But I went, I'm going to go report this to the archive. So I went down and I said, can you pull the folder for room 324, please? And she said, no problem. She pulled it out, and it was report after report about two children, a boy and a girl, who were very sweet, who would pull the covers off the bed or turn the lights on and off or play, run around giggling. I didn't know any of that. None of us knew any of this going into this experience. A couple of weeks later, someone who had been in the room he had found a tiny little news story about a child drowning in a lake not that far from the hotel. The name didn't quite match up. It started with A. I don't remember what it was, but it was close enough that we thought, could this be Ava? Could Ava have been her nickname? And you know, it was a lake that no longer existed, that had once been sort of adjacent to the property. The events of that night were so undeniable. I won't deny that it was exciting. Because, of course, it's very exciting to think that there's more out there, that ghosts exist. The significance of that event has sunk in with me insofar as it was the beginning of what seems to be a new chapter of my life in which the denial is gone, the skepticism is obliterated, and I now consider myself what they call a sensitive.
Thank you, Daniel Noah, for talking back to Ava and sharing your story with us. Daniel and his partner, Elijah Wood, they produce the podcast Visitations, a Shudder original. They interview some of their favorite people in the creative community about turning their deepest fears into art. Visitations. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our website, snapjudgment.org, for information on their awesome show. That original score was by Davey Kim. The story was produced by Eliza Smith. It's that time. But if you dig spook storytelling, know this, you are in luck. Why? Because there are 26 all-new episodes of the Snap Judgment Presents Spooked, created in the dark of night. The full season, available only on the Luminary app. You can get the Luminary mobile app. Go to luminarymedia.com. Be afraid. Spooks is brought to you by the team that leaves no drink undrunk. Please hide the silver. From the Uber producer, Mr. Mark Ristich, Anna Sussman, our chief spooksters, Eliza Smith, Annie Nguyen, Chris Hambrick, Renzo Gorio, Leon Morimoto, Lauren Newsom, Jacob Winnick, Marissa Dodge, Tiffany Liza, Ann Ford, Eric Yanya, Sunakhan. The spook theme song is by Pat Masidi Miller. My name is Lynn Washington. Remember, 26 episodes of Spooked await your listening pleasure right now on the Luminary app. And believe me when I say, it's the best advice I have to give. Please, never, ever, never, ever, never, never, ever, ever turn out the lights.